questions.
Might be a slightly shorter episode this week, only because my voice is a bit rubbish. But anyway, and I'm going to start with the schmestions, Mark, if that's all right with you.
Okay.
Just because I think they're quite interesting. Bethany in Maine starts the whole thing off.
Hello, Bethany.
What's the one thing you regret? Now, so there's not been a lot of sleep going on in this house recently because of backs being put out and that kind of thing. So consequently, I found myself thinking, waking up at like 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. or whatever it was, walking around the house, making chamomile tea and thinking, what's the one thing you regret? And a bunch of things occurred to me. And then I thought, well, the thing is, if I talk about those on the podcast, I'll regret them even more because more people will know about them. And so I don't want to do that. So I'm going to go first because the only thing that I could think of that I was prepared to say, which wouldn't attract unnecessary attention into places that you wouldn't particularly want, would be, what's the one thing you regret? I regret sitting out in the sunshine when I was a kid and a teenager to the extent that I did, because once you've had bits cut out of you because they're cancerous, you kind of think, this is, well, what was I thinking? I mean, I know we know a lot more, and I know Baz Luhrmann has told us to wear sunscreen, but I wish I'd known that back in the day, because I can say for certain, the one thing I regret is that whole fascination with getting a suntan, because it could be the death of you. So I would say, Bethany, that's the one thing I regret that I'm prepared to actually admit to on this podcast.
Yes, wear sunscreen.
Yeah.
That was such a great
record. Yeah, it was. And also, it is genuinely true that there is an anti-aging cream and it's called Sunblock or Factor 50. And if you wear it every day, you will look younger than everybody else. And that's just scientific fact.
So in terms of my answer, because I'm literally just hearing this question now, I thought it was funny what you just said about thinking about the things that you regret and not wanting to say them because somehow, you know, if they're said and they're out in the world.
It might be between you and someone else, and then by announcing it to everybody, then that's not fair on the other person.
No, exactly. This is absolutely true. I try really, really hard not to regret anything. That's not to say that I haven't done things that I should regret, but I am very much a believer in the everything got me to this point, and I think that I am very blessed, lucky, fortunate in my situation. You know, I have nothing to complain about. That does not mean that I don't complain, because I complain a lot, but I have nothing to complain about. I, you know, my family and my, you know, central relationships, my friends, I have a very tight group of friends who I have been friends with, you know, for a long time and who I trust absolutely. And I would
include the one thing you regret.
You and, I'm getting there. I would include you in that equation as well. Thank you for talking across that bit. So it's hard to actually think of something that I actually regret that isn't utterly trivial. But there is one thing that I regret that will sound utterly trivial, but it goes like this. I was in my, the good lady professor, her indoors, and I used to live in number one Mornington Crescent. We used to live on the fourth floor of number one Mornington Crescent. We had this pokey little apartment. And I was writing a piece for the NME, and Linda came into the room and she said, look, I've had a phone call from Rob, and there is a gig happening in it was called The Borderline, just Tottenham Court Road. And it's in an hour's time. And you really need, he says, we really need to go. And I said, I can't, I've got a deadline. She said, no, he says, you really, really need to go. And I said, I can't, I've got a deadline. And she went, Mark, this is Rob, our very good friend, telling us, it's like, we can walk to Tottenham Court Road from Mornington Crescent. Just stop working. I said, I've got a deadline, like literally a deadline in a couple of hours. I cannot miss that deadline. And Linda rolled her eyes and, you know, like, for heaven's sake, you're insufferable. And I didn't go. And it was Spinal Tap in The Borderline playing as Spinal Tap, a tiny, tiny little unannounced gig. And Rob and the good lady professor, her indoors, went backstage and met Spinal Tap in character. And of course, because both Rob and the good lady Professor Her indoors, No Spinal Tap, like Inside Out, basically conversed with them as if they were Spinal Tap and had one of the best experiences of their life, and then came back. And Linda went, did you hit your deadline? And I went, no. And she went, ha. And then she told me the story. And I really regret that. I should have just listened to her. She said, you need to come to this. I said, no, I need to hit this deadline. No, I didn't.
Bethany, they're the answers then. Sunita in Barnsley. Now, I think there's a steer. It might just be me, but there's a subliminal steer in this. Very short question. What's the biggest waste of money at the moment? Is the question. Now, I think this is leading towards, I think the suggestion is people are going to go, the coronation. I think that's what the steer is.
Oh, I see. I saw. I hadn't read that. I had automatically, assumed something else.
What did you automatically assume?
I thought,
That's not my answer.
No, it wasn't my answer either.
Because if you bring this up, it's like a dinner party sort of thing. What is the biggest waste of money at the moment? Whatever it is that that person doesn't like, that will be the thing that's the waste of money. So that I might say, for example, homeopathy seems to be a waste of money just because it's not my thing. But other people whose thing is, they'll be prepared to spend a lot of money. The other thing that occurred to me along with homeopathy was GB News. Occurred to me as a waste of money. And in the week that they'd be, Ofcom has find them in breach of broadcasting rules for a second time. Again, underlining the fact.
What did they do this time? Correct. Did they just go on air?
Anyway, it doesn't matter. But also, I think what Sunita might be suggesting is public money. Do you think? I don't know. So, what do you think might be the biggest? Oh, let's just say it's not public money. It can be anything that you want.
Well, if it's public money, I would say the money that America is spending on security detail for Trump. I think that's an absolute waste of money. I think when somebody has denigrated the position of a president as much as they did, they have no right to be protected by the Secret Service for the rest of their life. When we look at all the money that was spent flying Trump and his grotesque family around expensive golf courses around the world when he was meant to be working as a president, and how much they still spend now on his security detail looking after the person who was recently found liable for the sexual assault of journalists. I think that's a waste of money. I think, you know what? You're on your own, bozo.
There you go. So there's hopefully there's some fulsome answers there for Sunita, taking her in some unlikely directions. An email from The Overthinker. A listener recently notably brought up their ability to play music in their imagination. I myself think quite filmically and often project music inwardly, intentionally into situations, usually because they remind me of film situations like soundtracks. On discussions between you, this brought the term earworms to the fore. When Googled and sifting past bizarre-looking worms found in ears, I noticed that imagined music is actually quite common and has resulted in such phenomenon as hurdle. Have you heard of hurdle?
No.
As in H-E-A-R-D-L-E. Anyway,
No.
Music is filled with patterns, which...
Hurdle?
I think it's a site where you can hum tunes and they tell you what it is, but our production team will. Okay, now let's check that.
Okay, so it's like Shazam, but you don't actually have to play the thing; you just hum the tune into it. Because if that is a thing in the real world, then that is a major leap forward for mankind. Because I have said to the good lady Professor Her indoors so many times, "What's that tune? The one that goes na 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 na." She goes, "What? If there was a machine that could go, that is, I want to dance with somebody." Then that would solve me a lot of problems.
Hang on a sec. So hurdle, like Wordle, is a daily guessing game. Oh, it's a guessing game. That's no use. Okay, it's a guessing game.
Hang on. I'm hearing through the control panel that there is such a thing as something you can sing a song into and it tells you what it is. What's it called? It's not hurdle. Okay, if anybody knows what that is, because I would like to try it out.
Anyway, the overthinker continues. Email. Are there films where the sound becomes more perceptible or meaningful or pivotal than the image? That's what he's boiling down to, or she. Are there also films that play with the viewer's own imagined content? Oh, well, no, never mind of that. So, is there a film that springs to mind where the sound is almost like the most important thing?
Well, yes. I mean, there are films in which, Derek Jarman's Blue, for example, in which the screen is blue and there is nothing but the voices, and you know, so there are films made in which the sound is everything. If you mean, are there more stereotypical, you know, movies in which the sound is absolutely driving the story, then I'm sorry to sound like the greatest stuck record in the world, which, believe me, I know that I do, but I will refer you to the fact that William Friedkin said that The Exorcist was a radio play with visuals, that he worked from the soundtrack up. And as somebody who actually has been through the sound tapes of The Exorcist, sitting in Warner Brothers up in Burbank, going through their archive of those sound tapes, the incredible work of Ron Nagel, you know, annoying wasps and, you know, going to abattoirs to record sounds of horror. Yeah, I think it's quite often the case. I mean, David Lynch's Eraserhead, if you turn the sound down on that film, it means nothing at all. But you can play the soundtrack album, which has got a lot of that incredible sound design by Alan Splett. You can conjure the movie in your head. Dougal and the Blue Cat, the visuals are fine, but it's all to do with the sound of it. I think there are plenty of movies in which you see the movie with your ears.
I would add to that Oliver Stone. Oh, by the way, Oliver Stone, give it up. Leave it alone. But World Trade Center. He came in and talked about World Trade Center. And some of the most scary bits about that film for me were the sound design, where you hear the buildings collapse.
The
you
building come down.
We know
yeah,
what the building
right.
collapse looks like because we've seen it. But in World Trade Center, we hear it. And that was an astonishing and terrifying moment. So that was the thing that occurred to me.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, so sound design is really, really important to film. And it's quite often the case that the sound is doing all the heavy lifting.
Brian Daniels. Simon and Mark, I have a dilemma. In September, I will be marrying the love of my life. My fiancé is generous, warm, funny, handsome, supportive, dedicated. There are not adjectives enough. There is, however, one big problem. Try as I might, he will not convert to the church. Over the course of our 6-year relationship, I have made numerous attempts to welcome him into the congregation. On frequent road trips across the country, I've suggested listening to the podcast. We have never listened to your witterings in the car. When deciding upon a film to watch on a Friday or Saturday evening, I frequently remark, what does Mark recommend? He continues to turn to moldy fruit reviewing services instead. Mm-hmm. It's quite a distressing email. I even took him to your Halloween special at the O2. Upon leaving, I asked what he thought. He said, it's just a load of dad jokes.
Well, you say that like it's a bad
thing.
So
I come to my question, or is it a schmestion? Do I break off my engagement with this Philistine and board your upcoming summer cruise in search of someone who truly appreciates your efforts and sail away into the sunset? Or do I have your permission as heads of the church and custodians of the faith to join with this non-believer and accept his shortfall as the and for worse part of the matrimonial vows? Yours in anticipation, Eleanor. Sorry, it's from Eleanor, BAMA, 50 meters breaststroke gold winner, 2005. It's not from Brian Daniels. That's why I got slightly confused. This is from Eleanor. Well, I think the Old Testament, Eleanor, is quite clear in its instructions about being yoked to a non-believer.
Is yes? it? And Remind me
it
what
says,
it says.
Thou shalt not be yoked to a non-believer.
To a non-believer.
So the answer, Eleanor, is I'm afraid you have to break off your engagement with this Philistine and come on the cruise and find someone who truly understands you.
Well, I beg to differ.
Oh, okay.
May
Fair
I?
Enough.
Yes. I think that it's now more than ever, it is important, hands across the ocean, multi-faith, you know, we're all a bit, aren't we? And in a way...
We're all a bit what?
You know, just generally, you know, and I thought, that's like life. I think that it is important to embrace a diversity of opinions and beliefs. And I think that if this gentleman caller has all the virtues that you said he does at the beginning, I think it is simply a matter of time before he finally succumbs to the charms of the podcast. But in the meantime, if he doesn't, you can feel... I mean, put it this way. If fabulous women decided not to marry a bloke because of their many failings, we'd all be in a worse position, wouldn't
we? Okay, so basically, Eleanor, either break it off or stay committed. The choice is yours.
But come on, Simon. Both you and I know that women marrying beneath themselves is a...
Yes, and Eleanor is... Okay,
has benefited
let's
us...
Let's frame it like that. Eleanor, it may well be that you're marrying beneath yourself, but maybe that could be a good thing.
Exactly. Maybe not for you, but on behalf of the gender, we appreciate your service.
Now, this is the email from Brian Daniels, which I thought that one was, but it's not. It was this one.
Brian is listening and he's very confused absolutely. Now.
Dear Doctor in the House and Doctor in the Attic, this might be the last question, I think, before I disappear. Okay. I think if we were on medium wave, my voice would now be inaudible completely. It would just be like a low rumble. I was discussing with my good friend Moll, a proud convertee to the church. Ah, there you go. The recent correspondence and discussions on the subject of aphantasia. And it set us extending the conversation concerning the ability or otherwise to view images inside your head to the voices that you hear. This is not from the form of those people suffering from mental illness, but rather from those whose voice do you hear? Whose voice do you hear when you are reasoning with yourself? In our cases, the answer was our own. Or at least we think it sounds like that, which I appreciate can be very different from when it is heard as a recording. This is, however, frequently not the case whilst reading a book, when the brain can interpret how it believes the character's voice should sound. Okay?
Yes.
Anyway, long old question here from Brian. He gets to it in the end. Taking all of that into account, I realise I haven't brought you all of that, but it doesn't matter. And appreciating with your good selves, the situation is compounded by the voice of the infinity pool. I don't know if the infinity pool is actually monitoring what we say today or not. Anyway, I'm just curious as to, here's the question mark. What goes on inside your head? That's the question. Ooh. And given your vocations, if you can recall how you reacted the first time you heard your recorded voice, and did you change anything as a result? Hello to Jason, down with zealots.
I can give you a specific question.
Yeah. So do you recall how you reacted the first time you heard your recorded voice?
Yeah, absolutely. I was in Chalarina, which was the bungalow that my grandfather and my step-grandmother, who's from Switzerland, lived in Child Oakford in Dorset. And my grandfather had a reel-to-reel tape recorder. My grandfather looked like Errol Flynn, had a reel-to-reel tape recorder. And he recorded the sound of me and my brother and my sister talking. And, you know, my sister was la-la-la-la-la, and my brother was la-la-la-la-la. And then, you know, la-la-la-la-la, and then he played back the recording. And it went like this. My sister went la-la-la-la, blah-blah-blah-blah-blah, and my brother went la-la-la-la-la-la, and then the voice went I thought, good grief, is that what I want to, the world, I want the ground to open up and swallow me. Yeah, it was horrifying.
So did you make changes as a result of that?
Yes, and I've changed my voice many times over the course of my life. I don't talk anything like I should talk at all. I don't know where the voice I have now came from, but I made it up.
There used to be booths on the end of piers where you could go in.
You could record yourself
and you'd get a 7-inch single.
Yes.
Which came out of a groove. And it would cost, I don't know, 2 and 6 or something. And you'd then sit in the booth and the red light would go on and you'd just talk for 3 minutes.
That's or whatever, right.
About, and I still have, Brighton I still Rock. Have this recording.
Really?
Yeah, it's a...
You've still got the record.
I couldn't find it for you. And in this record, there is this tiny child speaking as though received pronunciation is the only thing which we speak at home. Is that okay, Mummy and Daddy? I've saved 2 and 6 to do this record. I'd like to say hello. And then I start doing dedications, like I'm on Ken Bruce's Pop Master, now available on Greatest Hits Radio, Monday to Friday. But I do dedications. I say hello to my parents. I say hello to my sister. I go home and then I see them. And anyway, so it's utterly, horrendously embarrassing. So as a result of that,
it does
try to sound less posh.
it does provide the punchline to the brilliant film of Brighton Rock, which you may well have seen, in which he goes to the end of the pier to record exactly as you're saying, and he goes into the booth because the young woman that he's with, who doesn't understand just how vile he is, says, "Well, go into the booth, go into the booth and make a recording." And he goes into the booth and he says, "I know what you want me to do. You want me to tell you I love you. But in fact," and then he goes on and he does this whole vitriolic thing. And then at the end of the film, she plays the record and he says, "I know what you want me to do. You want me to say I love you." And then it just, "I love you. I love you. I love you." And that's the end of the film. It's just him saying, "I love you, I love you, I love you," over and over again because of a click in the groove.
Well, on balance, I didn't say that. I just said, "I'd like to say hello to my mummy and my daddy."
When you listen to you on Radio 1 in the 80s, do you sound the same?
It's slightly more helium has been taken by the sound of it. I think in general, your voice goes, it sort of winds, it goes down a bit.
Goes down.
So when because on the social media site that you don't frequent anymore, there are various jingles and downloads from radio stations from years gone past, and I often turn up on that. And whenever I listen to myself doing breakfast, I do sound as though I've inhaled helium.
has your accent changed?
Not for 40 years, I don't think, no.
Okay.
Anyway, my voice might disappear. Bizarre that we should end up by talking about what our voices sound
exactly.
like when my voice is rubbish. So,
can you see if you can find that record?
I will do.
I mean, it may be in your attic along with the Rembrandt.
Yeah, actually, let's redo that schmestion. What do you most regret? Not finding the blooming Rembrandt.
The Rembrandt that you are.
We've got a Rembrandt in the house and I can't find it. That's what I regret. Blimey. Anyway, if 1 week there are no downloads appearing in your inbox, it's because I haven't turned up for work because I've discovered the Rembrandt. Anyway. That won't happen.
Can we just finish the show and I'm going to tell you a joke, okay?
Right, okay. This is the end of the show.
This is the end of the show. The end of the show, okay? There's an old bloke sitting on a bench crying. He's just weeping quietly to himself. This young woman comes over and she says, "Are you all right?" He says, "Oh." She says, "What's the matter?" And he says, I've got a lovely wife. I've got a lovely family. I've got lovely kids, got a lovely car, got a lovely house." She says, "What's the matter?" He says, "I can't remember where I live."
It's a bonus laughter lift, which only a very select number of people have appreciated, having got to the end of our third take. But top gag. Maybe it's going to be a new feature. Mark finishes take three with a joke.
Mark's final gag.
Thank you. We'll be with you again shortly.